Retirement Conversation is a series of episodes on the changing nature of retirement today. These conversations are focused on the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition, including career, work, purpose, wellness, social relationships, and leisure pursuits. You'll hear from leading experts in the field. You'll hear the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll find out about practical ideas and tips to create your own. Retirement Wisdom was co-founded by Joe Casey and Dennis Wussman, two former business executives turned professional coaches. At Retirement Wisdom, our mission is to save people from a boring retirement. We hope you enjoy the series and conversations.
Welcome to the Retirement Conversation. Our guest today is Nicole Maestas. She is a PhD and Associate Professor of Healthcare Policy at Harvard Medical School. Her research studies how the health and disability insurance systems affect individual economic behaviors, such as labor supply and the consumption of medical care. Her research in disability economics has shown how the federal disability insurance system discourages employment by people with disabilities. Applying a causal research design to newly developed administrative data, her work showed that the work capacity of disability insurance beneficiaries with less severe disabilities is substantial. Furthermore, individuals lose additional work capacity the longer they stay out of the labor force pursuing a disability determination. Her work on the economics of aging has demonstrated significant shifts in labor supply patterns at older ages. She showed that one half of all retirees pursue a retirement transition path that involves partial retirement or labor force reentry, also known as unretirement, and that reentry was largely predictable ex ante and not a consequence of economic shocks. She has also argued that labor supply at older ages is likely to increase still further, even absent policy changes to promote employment at older ages due to increased labor demand for older workers. Indeed, her work shows that the rise in employment at older ages was driven in substantial part by an increase in labor demand by firms in the professional services industries. In current work, she is examining how these labor force trends and population aging, more generally, affect economic growth. Dr. Maestas has testified before Congress about her research on two occasions, once before the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee, and once before the Senate Finance Committee. She recently completed service on a national disability policy panel convened by the Social Security Advisory Board. Dr. Maestas graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Wellesley College. She received her MPP in public policy from UC Berkeley and her PhD in economics also from UC Berkeley. Prior to joining Harvard, Dr. Maestas was a senior economist at RAND. Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today in the Retirement Conversation. I'll jump right into the questions. As an economist, your research is multifaceted. How did you become interested in the topic of retirement and what keeps you interested?
So my initial work was actually on the joint retirement behavior of married couples, which is really interesting and quite common phenomenon that husbands and wives will tend to retire around the same time. And so that kind of got me started. And what's so interesting, I think, about the retirement decision that really differentiates it from all the other decisions that people make is that it is so complex and so many things weigh in. So the economics of the problem are, of course, pretty complicated, and a lot of factors play an important role. But at the same time, these other things matter a lot, the things that aren't the monetary factors or the economic factors. So it's not only about pensions and when is your pension claiming age. And I think that's what makes it so interesting and what kind of keeps me interested in this question. I'd say, too, that nowadays, people really are working longer and longer, and so these questions about should I retire, should I not, is this more of a process for me, or is it more of a once-and-for-all decision, continue to be really, really salient, and a lot of people are thinking about them, and they're thinking about them often in new ways than we saw in the past.
And people work and save for decades for retirement, and many strive for early retirement. However, you've noticed an interesting trend on retirement. What do you notice that's going on there?
So unretirement simply describes this phenomenon of somebody who retires and then at a later point in time, they go back to work. And what I thought was curious about it when I initially spotted it, we tended to think at the time about people making a single retirement decision, But I kept noticing the data that these retirees were at some point later observed back in the workforce, and so I thought that was rather curious. You know, why retire if you're only going to go back to work? Like, what's that about? And so I did some initial research on that, and I realized that it was actually a choice, kind of part of a broader retirement plan that many people had. The concern at the time was that, you know, these were people who'd worked and saved for decades and who had strived for early retirement. They had taken early retirement, but then something had gone horribly wrong. And there were a lot of news articles to that effect, kind of highlighting, you know, somebody here and somebody there who had run into trouble in retirement. But when we looked at it in nationally representative data over lots of years in different birth cohorts, I found that this was actually more positive, a positive trend for people. In other words, many people were kind of done doing what they had been doing and wanted to do something else.
And what are some of the things, some of the triggers that you notice are leading people to unretire?
Yeah, so there are a lot of different things. So the one way to think about unretirement in a way is just a way of working longer. And we've known for some time that more and more people are working longer. There had been a very long-running trend toward early and earlier retirement among men that reversed in the mid-1990s. And women, too. As women have entered the labor force, they, too, are working longer. And this is largely because they worked more in earlier life than in earlier cohorts. But one motivation here is this really is a way of extending your working career, but you don't have to stay in the same job you've been in. It lets you transition to doing something else. Maybe you change industry, change your occupation. Some people actually want to keep working, but they don't want all of the administrative demands of, you know, of a very demanding position. They like being a consultant, for example. You know, sometimes for some people, I think unretirement allows you to find a job that better meets the working conditions you're looking for at this particular time in your life. Maybe you can achieve the hours you want, or you're out of, you know, a very fast-paced environment, or maybe you actually want that. I mean, you know, it sort of, it gives you kind of a chance to reconfigure your working life. And I would say, too, that for some people, you know, employers won't allow them to kind of slowly reduce their hours over time, this idea of a phased retirement. And in that case, you know, unretirement it kind of results from having to stop working for your current employer and either, you know, go back to work for them or somebody else in a different capacity.
It almost becomes a do-it-yourself phased retirement.
It is actually a way to achieve a phased retirement without doing it through the same employer. I think for a lot of people, that do-it-yourself aspect lets you even kind of reinvent yourself. Some people will say that the thing they do after they retire is the thing they always wanted to do, or the thing that really, really drives their interests now. But, you know, people work longer in a lot of different ways. You know, it's not just about having to stop and then restart something else. Many people, in fact, will volunteer as a way to get some of the benefits of, you know, being in a workplace without actually working.
You know, when people hear about people working in later life, they often think it's financially driven. But what are some of the benefits that you see some people receive by working longer?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, this was exactly why I started looking into this question of, you know, what is unretirement? Is this a response to bad financial problems? And it really just is not that for most people. It is about being able to achieve something they want. Maybe they're not ready to stop working. And, you know, there's even a variety of research that suggests there can be health benefits to working longer if you're in the right kind of position. But things that people talk about here are, you know, the benefits of social engagement, even the benefits of physical activity. There have been benefits associated with the mental activity of jobs. And some people find that, you know, jobs are a way they kind of exercise their creativity, so they express themselves creatively at work by solving problems and helping people. And then, you know, I'd say another thing that you really can't underestimate is that a lot of us derive meaning and sense of purpose from our work. And these non-financial aspects really can't be underestimated.
Absolutely. Appreciate all of those. And what factors do women need to consider in thinking about retirement and in returning to work?
For women, the economics, you know, the structure of the problem, when do I retire and, you know, when should I retire or how should I retire, are similar to men, but some of the facts of women's careers are different in a way that means the calculus is a little bit different, right? And so one of these is that many women, not all, but many women have taken gaps in their career while they were raising children or caregiving for parents. And these gaps mean that as women approach their later ages, let's say they're in their, you know, early to mid-50s, early 60s, many of them are still really on the kind of upward trajectory of their earnings growth. So in other words, you know, they haven't really peaked out in their careers yet, both in terms of earnings and in terms of the jobs that they can hold. And that is really interesting because men, on the other hand, have largely peaked, and this is, of course, on average, a little bit earlier. They enter their 50s kind of already at their peak earnings, more or less, and there isn't a lot of benefit to further work for men in terms of earnings growth. And for women, this kind of these additional years of earnings are really important when it comes to their Social Security benefit. The Social Security Administration calculates people's retirement benefits based on their prior earnings. So if you, as a woman, have a lot of zeros in your earnings record because of the years you were caring for kids or caring for parents, work in your 50s and 60s can, you know, kind of replaces those zeros with nice numbers, nice positive numbers that really make a measurable difference in your Social Security benefits. And, you know, in recent research I've released, I showed that when women, if they were to work until about age 70, and this is, again, is an average across the population, but on average, women working to about age 70 would kind of close the gap with men in terms of the Social Security benefits that they would get.
With some of the trends we're seeing in longevity and people wanting to work much longer, what should companies be thinking about in the area of HR policies and programs?
Yeah, so, I mean, so this is really, really, I think it's a really, really interesting area. And there are a lot of companies who, you know, have been really kind of ahead of the trend, and they have very, very forward-looking HR policies and programs. They actively seek out older workers. They try to retain older workers. And they try to design jobs that will be attractive to their older workers. Increasingly, I think more and more companies will be facing these, really the demographic pressures, but they translate into economic pressures in the form of, I can't get enough labor. And many, many companies are increasingly bumping up against this. And this is just, you know, a simple function of the demographics of the United States. At this time, we have a very rapidly aging population. And, you know, it just means that we wind up having increasingly more and more older people compared to people in the traditional working years. And we just can't grow our labor force the way we used to. So our needs for consumption begin outpacing our productive capacity. That, of course, is a problem, and it's a problem for economic growth in the U.S. But older workers are this, you know, this great underutilized resource, and companies, I think, are increasingly seeing that they get great value from their older employees. And the challenge for them going forward is really going to be about crafting jobs that meet the needs and desires of older workers. Older workers are, you know, a little bit different from prime age workers in a few important regards. And we've done some research actually from the American Working Conditions Survey. We fielded this survey in 2015, and the whole point was to get an in-depth look at the working conditions, you know, on American jobs, but to look at it by age and in particular also figure out what is it that older workers really, really want. And you hear a lot about things like schedule flexibility. Older workers actually do a pretty good job of achieving schedule flexibility compared to younger workers. But they want, you know, they like autonomy at work. I mean, in many ways, these are things that everybody wants. But what's different about older workers is that they often have the ability not to work. They have their Social Security, maybe they have a pension, maybe they have their savings, maybe they have really compelling family demands like caregiving responsibilities, or maybe they have really exciting plans for, you know, joint leisure with their spouse or to travel or this, that, and the other. And so it really will become kind of up to employers to figure out, how do you retain your older workers? How do you attract them back in? Can you craft jobs that they'll accept? I mean, that's sort of, in a way, we're kind of, I think we're migrating toward a situation in which increasingly older workers are going to be able to kind of, they'll have a little more bargaining power, if you will, in this negotiation, and they'll be able to say, this is what I need, and if I can get the hours structured in this way, I will work. We find that many people say they, if the right job came along, they'd be willing to work. So it really is just a matter, I think, of employers kind of taking stock of what these things are. I mean, and the other thing I want to point out, that it's often not about the money. It is often much more about these non-financial aspects of jobs that really begin to drive the decision to work for many people. Not everybody, but for many people, they do now have the ability to say, I could just say no.
It's a great point about crafting your jobs. Flexibility is up there, but it connects to something you said earlier about really purpose and meaning are so high on the agenda, and people want to do meaningful work. That's what will draw them back or incent them to keep going.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right.
So a lot of people in our audience are either just retired or been retired a while, or most commonly thinking about retirement over the next 5 years or so. What advice would you offer someone who's listening and planning their retirement, or perhaps they're considering unretiring?
Yeah, I think it's important for people who have the capacity, the ability to continue working. Maybe they are a little bit on the fence about it. I would say go for it. Don't just assume that you'd never find another job, or you'd never find something that you'd like doing, or you'd never find something that could accommodate some special need that you might have, like hours or pay time off or telecommuting even. I mean, you know, there are lots of things and lots of different things that people want. I really think that the economic pressures are increasingly in their favor. There are myths abounding about, you know, I hear these things all the time about people not being able to get jobs when they're older. And it's not to say that there isn't age discrimination out and about in the U.S. labor market. I hear a lot about that as well. But at the same time, we do see in the data that many, many people, many, many older workers do get jobs. Many people successfully leave a job and flow back into a different job. It's really, if it is something that appeals to you, you know, I would say don't get overly concerned or worried about limitations. I would say, you know, go for it, try it. Don't, on the other hand, don't stay in a job that you hate or that is causing harm to your physical or mental health. You know, this is another thing where, again, you know, I mentioned at the outset that there has been a little bit of research documenting some health benefits associated with work. The other thing to point out about that research is that it is a little bit mixed. So sometimes people turn up health benefits, sometimes they turn up health decrements. And I think my hypothesis about really what explains these differences is whether people are in good jobs or not. Do they like what they're doing? Are they in a supportive environment? Do they like their boss? Do they like their coworkers? Or are they getting yelled at work? Do they perceive age discrimination? Do they feel like they're in a setting where they have really no future or no prospects for advancement in the way that suits them? So, you know, take a look at where you are. Don't, you know, by all means, I'm not encouraging anybody to stay in an unhealthy job, one that's unhealthy for them. But on the other hand, if you can see your way to trying something new, I would say really give it a go. Don't assume that it just couldn't happen.
Great advice. And one last question, if I could. What types of things are you researching and working on now, and how can people continue to follow your research going forward?
Great. Yes, we are just today, the American Working Conditions Survey version 2.0. So this is a 3-year follow-up survey of working conditions in the United States. It just went into the field today as we speak. So in about a month, we will begin analyzing new data that will allow us to really look at how, you know, give us kind of two snapshots at 2015 and 2018, 3 years apart, and look at some of these very interesting trends in employment and in the working conditions of workers of different ages. And we could look at that over time. We're really, really excited about that. I'm also working on studies of work capacity and work ability in a very, very detailed, almost medical way. So, for example, just because you have a particular health condition, maybe you can't do, you know, 1 of 10 things, but you can do 9 of 10 things. And so the idea there is to figure out what those 9 are and then match those 9 to potential jobs that you could do. So I'm really, really interested in kind of figuring out how does somebody who really wants to work actually, you know, how do they work? You know, is there some like barrier there in knowledge, either on the employer side or the worker side, and if we can kind of improve that match. And then the best way to follow my work would be to follow me on Twitter. I'm at NicoleMastis2 on Twitter.
Great. And we'll include that in the show notes for people, along with the recent article in the New York Times that talked quite a bit about your work. And thank you so much for joining us today. I know this is going to be very useful to a lot of people.
My pleasure.
Thanks. We really appreciate Dr. Maestas joining us today. Great conversation. And a couple of things jumped out to me. I'm flying solo today. Dennis is actually out, so we're keeping things going in his absence. First takeaway is that she really talked about unretirement or continuing to work in later life, even if you stay, as a chance to reconfigure what you're doing. It's not just a way of necessarily staying at the same employer or in the same job, but you talked a lot about how you could really recast it and get back to doing some things perhaps that you always wanted to do and use it as a launching pad for an opportunity to do some new and different things. So I thought that was really important to note. Secondly, she talked quite a bit about the benefits and the non-financial benefits of going back to work. A lot of people don't focus on those, but she made, I think, a compelling case of some of the benefits in terms of social engagement. The health benefits, although she noted that the research shows mixed results depending on the type of work and the type of work environment that someone's involved, and those are obviously really happy, really important things. She also talked quite a bit about the concept of job crafting when we were discussing what companies could do. But I think that's something also that individuals can do. Perhaps consider talking to your manager about your ideas for what you could do in your current company or a company that you might be interested in retiring to. A lot of good information, a lot of research-based facts that she shared, and I particularly loved her advice on going for it, but also the caveat, don't stay if you're involved in a situation that is not good for you or unhealthy. And finally, she noted that the game may be changing from the standpoint that really companies are going to need increasingly older workers. So it may be a time to really think through what you would like to go for and how to go about it. So great advice from Dr. Maestas. Thank you. Now we're moving to the solo edition of our noteworthy segment, where we highlight an article that we think is relevant and worth your time taking a look at. This one's very related. It really answers the question of how would you begin to do that? How would you go through the process of deciding what to go for and how to go for it? And we're highlighting an article by Dori Clark in the Harvard Business Review, Planning Your Post-Retirement Career. You'll find it in the show notes. It's a short article, and I think hits all the keys in taking this to the next step. First, she recommends looking at the financial side to make sure you've got a sense of that. But she also makes some of the same points that Dr. Maestas did about the fact that you really often don't need to work. You have some choices, and to really be thinking through what is most meaningful to you. Secondly, What's the logistical aspect of things in terms of location? Where are you planning to live in retirement? Where do you live in retirement? And how does that affect things you might be looking at in terms of consulting or other opportunities? And then are you looking for something that is a big shift or continuing and really moving off to some type of derivative of what you're doing today? So to really look at this as a transformative opportunity for you or something that's quite similar, but to perhaps look for advisory help if you're thinking about a bigger change. And then my favorite recommendation she makes is, can you start test driving your future work today? And I think that's something we see a lot of people doing successfully, maybe not enough, where you try to identify an interest, get involved before you retire, and see if it's something that really does suit you and it's something that's in line with what you thought it was. A very practical example of this that it really works well is really talking to some people on a networking basis, informational interviewing, so to speak, of people who are doing the type of thing that you're looking to get involved in. Network through your own contacts and others to get a chance to talk to people who are living the type of role that you're looking to do and to find that time well spent. You'll find the article in the show notes, Planning Your Post-Retirement Career by Dory Clark. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Retirement Conversation. You can get future episodes by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, or by visiting our website, retirementwisdom.com. Thank you, and until next time, look forward to talking with you again soon.